Talk Line Network Radio, America's longest-running Jewish broadcast network, the voice of the Jewish community.
Good evening, and welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Mask, mothers and fathers align saving kids, kids of all ages and all stages for all mental health issues. If you know someone that needs a referral for a parent support group, an inpatient or outpatient program, feel free to call 718-758-0400. You can call from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. You can call anonymously. Our helpline is confidential. I will repeat the number, maybe for yourself, a loved one, maybe for someone you sit next to, usually in shul. Our number again, 718-758-0400. It is a true, true honor. I don't say this lightly. I am so honored to have all my guests on the radio, but this is someone that has been with Mask from day one, or shall I say before Mask even began, and that is the world famous Rabbi Dr. Ben-Tzion Twersky. Yes, Dr. and Rabbi Ben-Tzion Twersky has been facilitating one of the parent groups at Mask for 24 years, since its inception. So first of all, a special yashar koach to you. Thank you on behalf of all of the thousands of parents and on behalf of the Mask staff and myself. Good evening and welcome. How are you, Dr. Twersky?
Baruch Hashem, and it's great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. I must say we've had tremendous nachas from the families that participate in your parenting group every Wednesday night for 24 years. I'm not sure if I looked it up. It may be that in 24 years, you may have missed 24 sessions for a Simcha or something. You have been so reliable and consistent for the last 24 years, helping families and knowing the benefits that those families receive being on your group. I want to talk about stigma and how when we started Mask around my living room table, and actually you being there, Dr. Twersky, with several other professionals in the field, how different it's changed from then until now. What are your feelings about it, please?
You know, just thinking back at that experience, I think it was a Sunday evening, if I remember correctly, it was... The experience was very interesting because we had a number of parents there. We had a lot of askanim, several people from chinuch, and a slew of professionals. And we were all scratching our heads trying to figure out, what are we going to do about this? This problem is not, A, it's not going away. B, it's getting worse. C, there's nothing we're doing about it so far that has any impact on it. The same families that have been suffering continue to struggle. We had a handful of yeshivas that existed to address those kids that were not fitting into what we would call mainstream yeshivas. But outside of that, there was really nothing being done. There were therapists who were individually seeing certain kids, but the kids were getting into trouble in various different ways, And the parents were mortgaging their evenings, running around looking for their kids. Where is my son? Where is my daughter? And then they were contacting each other. Oh, I saw your son over here, over there. You know, it was just a tremendous amount of effort being exhausted, and nothing was coming out of it. There was no progress, and none of the programs that we know today existed. And what MASC did was became an umbrella that parents could turn to, that they have listening ears, they have each other. Among the experiences that all the parents described that evening was how lonely they feel, how they have no life outside of running after their kids and occasionally talking to another mother who's busy looking for her kid. So this is a lousy way for them to spend time. And if they could band together and to do something productive, then you know, maybe there's a chance of saving somebody. And that's where MASC took such a pivotal role and such a comprehensive role in terms of trying to provide services and resources that would actually benefit the families in a very general sense, stabilizing them, the parents getting a life, the kids getting the kind of referrals and interventions that were necessary. It was just beautiful to watch it. And you know, I'm just reminiscing the reputation in the street about MASC at the time was unbelievable. Like, wow, we now have some place we can turn to.
Thank you. Yes, I remember the first meeting, community meeting that I actually put together where 27 parents showed up, and our dear friend, colleague, my mentor, Rabbi Ronnie Greenwald Elabashalem, was our MC, and how we asked anyone that wants to come up and speak for a moment. And I remember Yanky Horowitz, Rabbi Yanky Horowitz from Project Yes at the time, got up and said, we just opened Project Yes and we had to shut down the hotline because we could not, we were not ready for the kind of response and amount of calls that were coming in. So yeah, we both started at the same time. And it was really, parents were desperate for the help. And Baruch, there are so many organizations wanting to say that today, including addiction, divorce, whatever it may be that they are facing stresses with. Years of stigma, people were not speaking about, you know, depression and anxiety and bipolar, schizophrenia, like they are today. I want to talk a little bit about when I started it. It was about parents with kids that were addicted, they were, and what they're coming to your group.
You know, there was an overwhelming majority.
Some of your groups, please.
There was an overwhelming majority of the parents who came into the meetings for the first several years, that the primary issues were drug use. Occasionally alcohol, mostly it was drug use. And the drug use was, you know, it could have been anything. It could have been marijuana. It could have been harder drugs. And the spillover from the drug use was a combination of having a very, very distorted and a difficult to tolerate social life. It also put them into the crosshairs of the law, where they were apt to be breaking the law somewhere, whether it was directly with the drugs, whether it was the secondary kinds of crimes where they're doing various things in order to finance their drug use. Sometimes there were problems they were getting into of doing things while they're under the influence and committing crimes and getting into other kinds of trouble, getting kicked out of yeshivas because of these kinds of behaviors. So these are the most common things going on. And you have to keep in mind that while the parents were some more, some less aware of what the kids were up to, one of the factors which you mentioned earlier is that there's tremendous stigma. They were doing whatever they could to try to hide it. A, to hide the fact that their kid had a problem. B, to hide the fact that they needed to go for treatment, to the point where there were some parents who did not let their kids go for help because that would have been exposing the problem to somebody else. They could be seen walking into a therapist's office. The therapist would know, would have information about it. And they were much more defensive about their own reputation and their own image. And it was to the detriment of the kids themselves. When a kid needs help, kid needs help. And that's when it's time to forget about your own image, do what you got to do. These were challenging times. The stigma eventually increased. It still exists. It still exists. There are people that I know in the neighborhood where I live who have drug involvement. And people don't know about it because everybody's doing whatever they can to cover it up and to keep it hidden. It's sad. There's a very, very disturbing trend where parents try to withhold information and to keep it very secret because we have to enable our kids to get a shidduch at some point. And that's where, if somebody knows that one of my kids was drug involved, that kid isn't going to get recommended for a shidduch, and perhaps my other children aren't going to get it either. So, there's drugs in my home. These kinds of fears are, I understand them. They happen not to be realistic, but that's what people do. And it's actually quite bothersome because they block people from getting the help that the kids need to get.
Yeah, I want to bring up another point, please, and that is the siblings of those young people that may need help, how the siblings suffered all through their journey.
The siblings actually have an interesting journey for a number of different reasons. Number one, let's forget about a kid that's acting on the kid that's at risk. We have such a thing as, unfortunately, a child who's physically disabled, right? What do parents do when they have X number of children, one of whom has a physical disability. They have to do a whole lot of extra attention, time, and connection with the child that needs all this extra help. That time, that energy gets diverted from the other children towards that one child that has special needs. So the other children wind up losing something of the parenting because the parent is diverting that to the identified child here. That's one issue. The second issue is when you have a kid that's acting out the way that we're discussing in our context, what happens is that the fear is that the other children are going to be influenced and impacted by this identified child's behavior. There is some validity to that, but it usually gets built up far more than it needs to, so that we can probably well recall the days when a yeshiva would discover that their student's sibling, who was not in their yeshiva, was drug involved, and these siblings were not accepted. They were turned down because there's a sibling who's got a drug problem. So there's many ways in which the identified quote-unquote problem child is going to have an effect on others, whether they're being influenced by them or even if they're not. I'm flashing back to quite a number of years ago when MASC actually had a sibling meeting for the siblings of the identified kids at risk or whatever label we would use, kids in the Parsha, kids in pain, where there was a group for the siblings to actually express themselves and to be able to share what they're going through. A lot of times the siblings understood that there's something going on, and you know, ages might not really understand, hey, you know, you have an older brother, sister who's drug involved. All they may see is that there's a kid that's not doing what we would want them to do, what the family norm was, but many of them did not have the ability to grasp exactly what was happening. And the group was extremely useful. Years later, I had an encounter with one of the kids who had been in one of those groups and said that it was extremely helpful to allow them to express themselves then.
Dr. Torsky, I want to bring up a subject which has still tremendous stigma, but we've come really a long way. Unfortunately, we have to deal with this topic, and that is the stigma of sexual abuse. How parents don't find out for many years sometimes about it when they were younger and all through school. They may have had heart left them to a psychiatrist, a therapist, change schools, etc. And how, Baruch Hashem, because of speaking about the dangers of sexual abuse, how we're helping families, all the organizations, and the Rabbanim, and the community.
We've really done a tremendous amount over the years in terms of bringing the awareness of the subject matter to the public. It's now recognized as something that we know happens. As much as we would love to believe that it doesn't, we know that it does. I think there's still a lot more work that needs to be done. But one of the things that ties the hands of the system is that it's very difficult to recognize that the problems, the symptoms that we're facing are the result of sexual abuse. And if we can't identify that, it handicaps our ability to intervene. The nature of the beast is that the victim of sexual abuse very often does not produce that information for us for quite some time, and it just remains inside. It can cause tremendous amount of damage until the problem is actually known and until the person goes for the proper help. But in the meantime, you're talking about the latency of years before somebody realizes it. Almost every therapist I know has had a client that was completely unaware that that such abuse has taken place. And then the revelation of it came sometimes decades afterward. And it's the nature of the beast. The nature of human reaction to trauma like this is to hide it, to bury it, to keep it away from conscious awareness. It doesn't mean that it's not going to have an impact during that time. What it does mean is that no one else is going to know, and nobody else can actually help with it because they don't know. I remember having somebody in my office years ago who was describing this pattern of symptoms, which is vague. I really couldn't put my finger on anything. And on the way out of the office, this young woman turns to me and says, "Oh, do you think it's maybe because I was being molested regularly from age 9 until age 11? And it's like, you know, we could have spent the hour a whole lot different if you would have told us, if you had told me this an hour ago. Apparently she was aware of it, but she never shared it. And it's not something you can deal with if you're not ready to speak about it openly. And that's what people struggle with. Look, nobody wants to talk about sexuality. At least they don't want to talk about their own sexuality. And when it involves being victimized, it's certainly something which people are going to find a shameful topic to discuss. And when you have that, you have you're handicapped because you can't intervene there.
And Dr. Twersky, we don't recommend that parents, when they find out that their child was molested, we always say at MASC, please don't ask 1,000 questions, just validate whatever they're saying and get them to a professional so that the professional could work with the parents and their child. Whatever age, they could be married with 5 kids and cheer suddenly. So can you explain the importance of not having long conversations about the details when one finds out?
First of all, the details matter very, very little. That's number one. So that sitting and discussing it is really of dubious value. But it's even more than that, because if we were to interrogate somebody about the subject, we can very, very easily give them messages, verbally or non-verbally, that put them in a place of being responsible for what happened to them. That is something that is a fatal error. It's one of the most destructive things we can do. And the shame is that what the system did before the more recent opening of awareness is that they did that. So in other words, if somebody were to identify that somebody was a victim, whoever the adult was, we wanted to perceive that adult as being a reputable person. And we would quite easily turn around and say, you know, I think the kid's making it up, or the kid is the kid was the one who took the action. It was not the adult. And it was just effort to try to shift the blame to the victim, which cannot be done. It should never be done. And the effects of that are extremely destructive.
Dr. Twersky, we're running out of time. I just want to touch on one thing. Years ago, everybody thought that people had kids at risk, off the derech, kids acting out, were because they were divorced or dysfunctional homes. Can you just clarify today what we're seeing?
The way that we say it today is to paraphrase the pasuk from Makos Bechayrus, and it says, "Ein bayis asha ein sham beis." There is no family that is free of such problems. They are that pervasive that you can no longer sit around and say, "Well, it's because of these kind of parents, or it's because they come from a divorced family, or because this happened to them or that happened." It's so pervasive. What is true is that if you look among those kids that are struggling and suffering, you find an overwhelming number of kids who have been the victims of trauma. And that trauma can be abuse, it could be sexual abuse, it could be physical abuse, it could be emotional abuse. Some of the kids, the primary trauma that they went through was being bullied through school. We've seen that. The point of it is that there's a predominance of trauma that the kids are dealing with. What happens is that trying to limit this and believe that it's only certain kinds of families, that's not true. There are victims that are chosen just because they're there. There's some kids are mild mannered enough that they make excellent victims when perpetrators are looking for them. Whether that's the sexual or the bullying or the physical abuse that can happen, you know, both in school as well as at home. They make good victims because they're sensitive. They're sensitive people. They may not be the kind that are likely to fight back or to resist, which are otherwise very useful means for a person to have. But not when somebody is at risk of being victimized. You know, you'd want them to stand up for themselves, which their therapy, when they eventually get there, would be helpful for them.
Dr. Twersky, there's so much to talk about, and bullying is a very big issue that can last a lifetime, that trauma. Running out of time, I want to thank you again for the 24 years of your devotion to that Wednesday night parent group. Thank you, Dr. Twersky.
You're welcome, and the only reason that I hope that this group eventually stops is because we've got no more parents with kids that are struggling. I hope we and all the others in the field have that kind of impact, that we can abolish these kind of problems.
Amen. Thank you very much. I want to wish everybody a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos, and always remember, hang in, hold on, and now virtually hug tight. Please go on to www.massparents.org. Listen to our radio shows. You can listen to the podcast, whatever interests you. Please make a donation so that we can continue with our programs. And tonight's show is Zech Nishmas Rivka Bas Yisrael. Thank you and have a good night.
To all New Yorkers 12 and older who need COVID-19 vaccines, we'd like to welcome you to get yours. It's your turn. Get vaccinated today. Visit nyc.gov/vaccinefinder or call 877-VAX4NYC.